Welcome to Stoppage Time. I'm Aiden Herrera. We're back after a long hiatus. It's good to be back, joined by our Premier League roundtable consisting of Drew Peterson, Zach Smith, and Brad Taylor. Guys, good to be here.
Thanks for having us,
Aiden. How's it going?
How's it going?
All right, we've missed out on a lot. International break is over. Premier League is back, and let's get right into it. Let's start with you, Drew. Manchester United 4, Stoke City 2. United still in second in the table. Look kind of shaky in the first half, first couple of minutes, but quickly regained composure. Wayne Rooney notched his 200th club goal with a brace. Van Persie and Welbeck also scoring some goals. Overall, how would you rate Manchester United's performance?
Man, we don't know how to start a game, do we?
No.
Seems like we always... I think it's what's that we've started the game... 8 of our games we started out with a deficit. We came back and won 7 of them. The one loss, obviously, being Everton. But, man, no, it's Wayne Rooney with the hat trick, of course. Just not for the right team, I guess. 2 goals for us, 1 for them. Right. But, no, we don't know how to start games. Our defense is shaky, of course. Without Vidic, it's going to be a huge thing. And Phil Jones and Chris Smalling did start training this week with the reserves, not with the first team, but still. So they'll be back in 2 to 3 weeks, which is going to help us exponentially. But we do not know how to start games at all. But since that own goal, it's United. They're going to come back. They're going to score goals. It's expected. It's in their history. It's what they do. So I wasn't too worried, but I am glad that Wayne Rooney did get goals. First of his Premier League, he had 3 on their national break. 2 against San Marino, 1 against Poland. So, that's good to get him on the score sheet because Van Persie obviously is on fire. And so, it was an overall game. I thought it was great playing a 4-3-3 with Van Persie, Rooney, and Welbeck starting up front. Our attack was incredible. Like I said, our defense is shaky. Our attack's incredible. If we can figure out a defense, then we could be something to reckon with. But until then, our forwards are going to have to bail us out of every game, it seems like.
David De Gea getting the start. Had some decent saves. Are you on Team De Gea, or are you switching over to Team Lindegaard?
I'm on Team De Gea, and I think he's young. I think he's, 21 years old right now? Youngest goalkeeper in the Premier League, so I think he's got time to mature, time to develop. He's a great shot blocker. Great shot blocker. Now, on corners, special pieces, he's not the best at coming out for the ball. He doesn't know when to come out and grab it, when to punch it, when to stay in goal, and usually mistimes it, and there's often goals scored because of that. But I'm a De Gea fan, but Lindegaard's not that bad either. I don't know how much the 1-2 punch can really benefit both of them. I think Fergie's going to have to pick one by Christmas time to go with solid. But for right now, the rotation's working, I guess. De Gea's had some clean sheets. But yeah, I'm Team De Gea.
A lot of people think Paul Scholes could have been sent off for a second bookable offense in the first half. Do you agree?
It was close. It was with Paul Scholes. It's always close. It's every game he plays, somebody's gonna get a yellow card, hands down. His tackles are dirty. Not really dirty, I would say. Some of them are dirty. Mostly just hard nosed tackles. When he was younger and he was more agile, more quick, his tackles were probably timed right. This game they weren't. So he had to be brought off. If he would have played the full 9 minutes, I think he honestly would have had a red card and been done. But, yeah, I love the mentality. He's 35 years old, still out there pulling strings, still out there being conducting the midfield. You can't say enough about the guy, but, yeah, I think, honestly, he should have got sent off. He had, after his yellow card, he had 2 challenges before the halftime was over, first half was over, and he should, honestly, I don't know how he didn't get sent off.
So another United win, taking care of business. Their neighbors across town also taking care of business, but keeping it competitive. Manchester City 2, West Brom 1. Once again, Roberto Mancini calling on super sub Edin Dzeko to save the day. 2 goals from Dzeko. They're still unbeaten in the Premier League. Although City was reduced to 10 men in the first half when Milner got a red card. Brad Taylor, how would you rate Man City's performance?
I think it was a grinded-out performance. It's games you have to win.
to be in the title hunt. You know, Milner, obviously company gave the ball midfield, made a huge mistake. Milner just, he had to make some sort of challenge or they would have been cleaned through. Obviously got sent off, but playing with 10 men for 70 minutes and able to get 3 points is definitely something you have to do if you're going to want to compete for titles down the stretch.
Now, Dzeko, once again, being called upon and scoring goals, is he ever going to get his time in the starting 11?
I think you have to. I mean, he's leading the team. He's got 5 goals. He scores. And I think Mancini's going to have to give him a shot in the starting 11. But if he continues to come off the bench and produce, it's a tough decision. But I think you have to get him in the starting 11. I mean, he definitely completely saved the 3 points for us, and you have to give him credit for that.
David Silva was absent from this game due to injury, but do you think the midfield was fine in his with his absence?
Well, obviously you're going to miss Silva, and he's not traveling for the Champions League game tomorrow, Wednesday, with a hamstring injury. Obviously you're going to miss a world-class player like him, but I think as long as you have Yaya Toure, I think he's one of the top midfielders in the world, and when you have those two paired up, it's even better. But I think that he will be able to keep things stable. We got veterans like Gareth Barry. Obviously, James Milner was playing, got sent off. But I think we have solid guys, and we have depth, which is important that we've added over the summer for when guys do go down, that you can bring class players on and step up and fill the shoes.
You have one player in particular so far you've been really impressed of so far this season?
Well, I would have to say, obviously, Dzeko's been playing well. Yaya Toure seems to always be class and always be clutch for us. A player that has kind of been a disappointment, got off to a slow start, I would say, is Vincent Kompany. He's obviously the captain, the leadership, but has really, I don't want to say struggling, but you know, he's had some lapses that are really uncharacteristic of him. He's really a solid defender, but I have full faith that he'll get back in form. He's just been struggling a little bit early on.
Okay, so the Manchester team's getting the work done. Now let's switch over to the Liverpool squads. Zach Smith, Everton 1, QPR 1. QPR still without a win, but I think a lot of people thought this was a game Everton would take care of and come out with the 3 points handily.
Well, it was originally. I thought we came out a little bit flat. Obviously, they scored in the second. This is a game I actually listened to on the radio, which is something I've never done. And if you haven't ever listened to a Premier League game on the radio, you need to, because it's exhilarating. Watch the replay later. It was just, like I said, we came out flat, a little relaxed on defense. We've got Phil Neville playing center mid. This is the biggest problem our team has, is we are not deep in the midfield. When Donovan comes on loan in the spring, that'll help a lot.
Oh, is that confirmed?
Yes, it's confirmed. But our center midfield, we missed Fellaini tremendously. He's a facilitator. He is the bricks and the mortar for our midfield, and you can't say enough about how important he is to our team and our team chemistry. I did like the lineup we went with. I liked the Anichibi start. I think that was a good decision by Moyes. He's been showing, you put him in the 80th minute, he'll score a goal the last 3 times he's been in. So I like the lineup we went with, what we had to work with. It'll be nice to have hopefully Gibson back this next week with Fellaini. Biggest event of the game, though, obviously, was the Steven Pienaar sent off in the 64th
right.
minute.
Right. Fair?
No, absolutely not. This is a team that you'll look at the table and you'll say, wow, they are lucky to be in fourth place, and it's really not the case. If you've watched the games they played, they faced a lot of adversity from the referees. It shouldn't have been sent off. It was one of the lightest touches I've seen, yellow card so far this season. He was aggressive. Maybe he should have been a little bit cautious, knowing he had a yellow about 20 minutes ago. But
right.
No, he should have been sent off. The guy should have never fell down. But that, what do you do with 10 men? You dig in and you play defense. And I was very pleased with the way we did that, and we held on to a point, because when you're down 10 men with another 40 minutes to go, doesn't happen that often. So, QPR, I think, has been unlucky. I think they're better than 2 points or 3 points at this point. I think they will. I don't see them getting relegated. I really don't. But
they spent a lot of money.
They did. They spent a lot of money, and I think when you go after the veterans the way they do, I think that'll play off later in the season. Cesar had an awesome game. He really did. He kept a couple balls out there, really.
Apart from the own goal.
Yeah, the own goal, Distin was wide open when he hit that end. Right. There's not much you can do about that, I don't think, after watching the replay. But he kept a couple just really hard-hit balls out late on in the game that would have put us in front. I don't think really either team, after Pienaar was sent off, I think we had the momentum. But after that, I don't think either team really could claim 3 points. I don't think it was dominated by either side. I think it would have been without that happening. But overall, I was pleased with the point. When you go away anywhere in the Premier League, it's always good to get a point, and it's good to stay in the top four. And I think we're especially looking forward to the derby next Sunday. We needed to get a result, and that's what we did.
It's hard to pick up men of the match in the draw, but if you did have one, maybe Jagielka. It was impressive.
Absolutely, I would say it was Phil Jagielka. He played lights out on defense. There were two headers off the post that he had that could have very well. Well, one off the post, one was saved by Cesar that could have very well went in. I was very, very pleased with Jagielka, and I'm really at this point. I love Phil Neville to death, but I think Jagielka needs to be wearing the captain's band, and I think that's something that would keep him here at Everton, and that needs to be his role on this team, because he is he's crucial in our back four.
On to the other Liverpool squad, the Reds getting a 1-0 win over Reading at Anfield. Raheem Sterling with the long goal. Drew, this was Liverpool's first Premier League victory at Anfield. Are you buying that this will create a wave of momentum?
The fortress, huh? At Anfield. No, it was...
You'll never win at home. At least we can't say that anymore.
In reality, what? Final score is 1-0. Y'all dominated the game. 27 shots, 7 on goal. But Raheem Sterling, dude, you can't count the guy out. He's going to be a sensation in the Premier League later on. He's, what, 17 years old?
Right.
Dude's crazy. Dude's fast. Dude's got pace. Until Chelsea buys him, right? But I think it's what Brendan Rodgers needed. First one at home.
He needed it bad.
Then again, it was against Reading.
It was.
But a win's a win.
Right, and I think the Sterling goal was very impressive, but I think what was even more impressive was Suarez's little flick to Sterling getting the assist. And that's what, for all of the ridiculous and dumb things Suarez does, when Liverpool fans see moments of brilliance like that, they realize that's why we love him.
I mean, we all, love or hate Suarez, you can't deny he's got a lot of skill and he can really make things happen. So I wouldn't really put him in the same class as Balotelli.
No, there's no doubt. He's the best llama to ever play the game of soccer. But he's
telling you, with Mourinho out,
right?
Suarez and Sterling are going to have to do something. Because Suarez can take it on by himself. He can't. At least until January. With Mourinho out, Sterling's going to have to play, years above his age right now. He's not going to play since he's 17 years. He's not going to play like he's been in the league for a couple of years. If Liverpool wants to get points, he's going to have to. It's just the way it is. But you have Sahin, and you got Stevie G. But it was a good game. I mean, Suarez connected great. Sterling, fine goal. First Premier League goal. Great game.
I mean, Hayden, do you think Gerrard with the skill set he has now, I mean, he's still a fantastic player, but is he still the same guy that can put the team on his back and make the plays that he did 3, 4, 5 years ago?
Right now, if he can, I think we're entering the twilight months of that. I don't want to even say year. I want to say months of that because it's getting pretty close. But what he has to his advantage is Joe Allen, who's a great holding midfielder. He's got Nuri Sahin, the transfer from Real Madrid, who will add to the midfield. Lucas is hurt right now, but watching being Liverpool, you know, those first episodes where they showed Lucas in his return, and you knew that, yeah, because then in the last in this final episode when they play Manchester City, we will see Lucas get hurt again, which will that'll be tough to see. But I think Gerrard is, you know, obviously he's getting up there in age, but luckily I think Brendan Rodgers has put a decent midfield around him to where he can still utilize him well.
I think Gerrard, I think he has another year or two left him to play at this level, but after that I think him and Lampard need to make like Tim Cahill and head to the States.
I just don't want to see him. My worst fear as a Liverpool supporter is seeing Gerrard the way Jamie Carragher is viewed,
or Chuck Liddell.
Right.
Here's the question.
Different sport, but
with Stevie G getting older, we still agree he's been class Liverpool through and through. With him kind of getting older and moving out towards the latter years of his career, is John Joe Shelby, what do you think, Eddie? Is John Joe Shelby the next Stevie G for Liverpool?
Well, I mean, everyone hopes so. I mean,
being 20 years old, he's got time.
Right. Also, I mean, Joe Allen could very well be. I mean, he was named Welsh Player of the Year. He overtook Gareth Bale in that position, something that's very hard to do. But I think, like I said, I think Brandon Rodgers has, you know, Joe Allen and Sean.
If turned over in his bed.
Devin Cook, yeah, heard Gareth Bale and arose. I think if John Joe Shelby can keep his temper down, we all saw what happened.
Plus, he can score goals.
In the United game, right. And we can tell by watching being Liverpool that Brendan Rodgers, he appreciates him, and, you know, he sees him as, I mean, he says he sees every player as, you know, a son, but you can tell that he's really got a special relationship with John Joe.
Yeah. And you talk about Shelby and his temper as a youngster. You know, imagine when he gets his bearings, you know, underneath him, and he gets a little bit more confidence and becomes a, you know, an everyday player. That's something that, you know, could escalate a little bit, I would think, that temper. So, I don't know.
We'll hope not. Hopefully, that's Brendan Rodgers' job to do what Kenny Dalglish could not do for Suarez. I mean, he's kept Suarez under control this year. So,
what do you think of Rodgers thus far?
Thus far, I mean, I'm drinking the Brendan Rodgers Kool-Aid. I really wanted Roberto Martinez from Wigan, but I think it was for the best that did not work out. And I think Brendan Rodgers, you know, he's got a game plan. He's got a philosophy he wants to establish in Liverpool, and I think it has the potential to be very successful. He doesn't really have the funds of Liverpool teams of past, but he still has enough where he can. We just signed Suso, the young Spaniard forward, to a long-term contract. And just watching him from the first 5 episodes of being Liverpool, but aside from the fact that he has a picture of himself hanging up in his house, I think he's a solid guy. What do you get? I mean,
at what point would you sack Brendan Rodgers? If where does Liverpool have to finish for him to hold on to this job? Because this is a club that's notorious for, you know, in the last, you know, a few years, getting rid of their managers pretty quick.
Right. I think everyone wants to see top four, and I mean, which
he's already locked up.
Already,
you know, in all seriousness,
already locked up. I mean, okay. Liverpool currently in 12th, 5 points behind Tottenham in 5th.
If Liverpool finishes in top 10, goes deep in Europa, if not
semifinals, quarterfinals, something like that.
Yep. Wednesday's game versus Anzi could be a huge game in Europa League.
I agree, Drew.
Top 10, he keeps his job.
That especially the cup game is going to play a huge role in, mm-hmm. in what happens to Brendan Rodgers. Not yes. necessarily yes. where they finish on the table, because I don't see them finishing top four. I really don't. But if they go deep in Europa, maybe win the FA Cup, maybe win whatever we call the Carling Cup now these
yeah,
days.
Yeah, the new. Yeah, there's a new yeah. sponsor every
so,
minute.
Yeah, I think those games are going to have a big role in where he ends up this season.
I think he has to have time. He's got to have time to implement his system and acquire the players that he wants to use in that system. I don't think it's necessarily smart. I mean, I know there's a lot of guys that are a lot smarter than me managing these clubs, but I don't think it's smart if you sack him just after 1 year and need to start the process all over again.
Yeah, they don't want to be like, I mean, well...
Which goes back to
Chelsea
and, you know, AVB. Is he the best coach in the world? We don't know. Porto, he did something great, obviously. Right? Right. But he had good players, had a whole care of people there. But I don't think Chelsea gave AVB the correct amount of time he needed to really shape that squad. Now, granted, if his Fofis are wrong or not...
I don't think they should have sacked Ancelotti.
Oh, yeah, exactly. That was the first problem. He finished the league before.
Yeah, and then finished second.
And won the capital, was it FA Cup? FA Cup, and then got sacked. Doesn't make sense.
It just goes to show how brutal it is over there, man.
It shows you how brutal the owner is.
Compared to sports in the U.S., if you look, you know, you have expectations here. When you hire a new coach after a bad year, you know, fans know that they're going to have to implement their system. You know they're going to have to take time to do it, you know, especially when we talk about collegiate sports here a lot. You know, over there with the way how critical people are, how critical the press is over there, you know, people will lose their jobs a lot faster than they do over here.
They didn't have a bad year.
No,
very not at all.
But go back to AVB. Still can't get revenge over Chelsea this week. Right.
Right. Let's go on to that game. Chelsea getting the win. 4-2.
That's the question.
How good is Chelsea? Granted, they've had no injuries. Don't get me wrong. But
Juan Mata's player of the year for them so far.
He's incredible. Yeah. He's literally incredible.
He's picking up the slack for Torres, that's for sure.
Too much money, too much talent. There's no doubt.
Given
they will finish top four, I don't know.
Do you think they'll win the Premier League right now? Do you think they will win the Premier League, Chelsea?
I'm going to say no.
We know how Chelsea runs. They're very, very streaky.
They are. And, you know, they're a ticking time bomb in that aspect to where something will go wrong, and they'll hit a slump because... Anytime you have a squad of superstar prima donnas, you're gonna have some chemistry problems, and I think that eventually that will happen. But you know, if you were asking me, you know, I'm putting a gun to your mother's head, you know, who's gonna win the Premier League? I'm gonna say Chelsea, yes. But
I'm just not certain right now.
You know, both the Manchester clubs are strong. You know, you have to. I'm not going to pick Everton to win the Premier League, no, but I'm going to pick them in the top four.
So your late October Premier League champion pick is Chelsea?
Yes.
Drew, what's yours?
Well, I would say the Premier League champion would come from the city of Manchester.
Yes, I would agree with
reason,
that.
Now, there's many points you make for City. With all the money they have, and all the players they have, and their starting four strikers are incredible. With Yaya, with, you know, David Silva in there, and with United not having Vidic back, having injury woes. Yes, that is a factor. But Chelsea, don't you know, Tottenham dominated the game with 26 shots. It wasn't like Chelsea just bossed them around. And granted, they won 4-2.
There were no Gareth Bale or Dembele.
Yeah. And the Daniels and the Sturridge goal was basically a consolation because Tottenham was pressing the whole time, trying to get the last goal and to get a point from the game.
Right.
So, 4-2, you could basically say it was almost 3-2. Late October pick, I don't think it's Chelsea. Juan Mata is incredible. Eden Hazard is playing out of his mind. Austria's great. They've had no injury.
Somebody's got to.
Someone's got to get hurt. Now, granted, United going to Tottenham next week is going to be huge and that for the FA Cup and Premier League.
Right.
Both games, three games in 2 days.
Right.
Or 2 games in 3 days.
Yeah.
It's going to be great. But I'm not convinced. I would like to see how they deal with John Terry being suspended, having Gary Cahill, who's great at times, who has had a wonderful strike this past game, but he's also been shaky defense, and David Luiz, who we know is great, but he's also been shaky defense also. So without John Terry, without that captain role being there, however much you want to say he influences the game or not, I like to see how they cope with that.
Yeah.
I like to see how they cope with when Eden Hazard and Juan Mata are not producing goals, when they have to put, you know, goal scoring on Fernando Torres back. He hasn't lived with that since the transfer yet.
Right. Yeah. Here's another thing about Gary Cahill. Watching him in the role he plays in this defense, me personally, does this guy move? Does he have an opportunity to move forward a little bit? Does he always have to be in the back four? Because this guy can score goals.
Right.
He can, and he has scored brilliant goals. You know, these aren't corner headers. You know, from your, you know, your generic set piece defender goals that they score. These have been, you know, strikes him 30 yards out. This guy can score. So I mean, is there an opportunity for him to move up into the midfield at some point for Chelsea? If you know, obviously they have all the money in the world to buy other defense to do whatever they want with their squad. Could they incorporate him in the attacking side of Chelsea?
I would say it wouldn't be out of the question, but it's amazing how many goals Chelsea's back four have scored.
Yeah.
Ashley Cole scored. Ibrahimovic has scored.
I mean, last year in the Premier League, Gary Cahill had 5 goals. That's a lot from a central defender.
Yeah,
that is a lot. Granted, 2 of those with Bolton, understandable, but that is a lot from a central defender.
I think
in the Premier League.
I think that this is really not that remarkable of a statement, but the title's going to come down to Chelsea, United, or City, and that's really nothing. It's not too special of a statement. But
right. Do you think it'll come into goal difference again?
I remember you talking last year how the title had never been decided on goal difference, and that was ironic that it did happen. But I think that Chelsea will falter a little bit. One thing that I'm pleased with City, I don't think we've been playing that well. I don't think we've been in just blistering form like Chelsea. I don't think United's really been playing that well. You know, City and Chelsea are still unbeaten. But I think it will come down to you just have to be consistent, and it'll come down to who can cope with injuries down the stretch and grind out, you know, 3 points when you have to.
Brad, you said Chelsea was a streaky team. I don't think we've seen any more of a streaky team than Arsenal. Ah. Arsenal 0, Norwich 1. At Carroll Road, Norwich getting their first Premier League victory of the season. They currently sit in 15th place, Arsenal in 9th. I don't know what to think. I was a couple weeks ago on the show, I was like, oh, they beat City. Oh, sky's the limit, you know? And they did well in their first couple Champions League game, which they're not in the toughest group Champions League wise, but back to the Premier League, I don't see them making, I mean, a run in the top four, maybe.
You never know which Arsenal's going to show up. Sometimes they come out and they look like competitors to challenge for top four, top three. They look like a good club, but then they'll show up like this, just flat and just really not play well, and you just never know which Arsenal team you're going to get, it seems like.
And I think they also, I mean, I think Norwich was eventually bound to get a win eventually, and maybe Arsenal was the unlucky victims on that day, but you got to also say Arsenal played pretty poorly.
Here's the thing on Arsenal. Spent tons of money, okay? As a United fan, thank you, Van Persie. I'll take it. At Piers Morgan, cry your heart out, eat your heart out, whatever. I'll take Van Persie.
Cheers for Piers.
But, it's like I think Brad hit on the head. It's whoever shows up that day with Arsenal team with Santi Cazorla, with Lewis Podolski, with Jorginho scoring 3 goals. Jorginho, who wasn't that great this year, who's been phenomenal this year so far. out of their six upcoming games in the Premier League, they play away at United, they play Tottenham at home, then they play away at Everton. Those are pretty three out of six tough games.
Right.
So we'll see what Arsenal thing is made of in the next coming weeks before Christmas starts, before around Thanksgiving. We'll see what they're made of. But I think some games they look phenomenal. I mean, six goals against Southampton, like you can say. That was fantastic. But, week before beating Liverpool 2-0, that's great too. But it also
at
depends
Anfield,
on
yeah.
at Anfield. But I think it depends on which team shows up. Again, going down 1-0 to West Ham, coming back scoring three unanswered goals to win. I think it depends on which team shows up. I think they have the players.
Oh yeah, Giroud scored against Spain in the international friendly.
Yes, they've signed the players.
In the World Cup qualifying.
They have Theo Walcott, who's can blow by anybody in the Premier League. We all know that. May not be the goal scoring center forward he wants to be, but he can blow by anybody in the Premier League. So they have the players. Now, if the players can sync with the manager, we all know. Obviously, Arsene Wenger's really won nothing since he's been there, which is the biggest argument for him. But I think Brad said it right. It's the biggest team. It's whatever Arsenal team shows up to play that game. That's all it is.
Your 2 cents on Arsenal?
Yeah, you know, and I agree. It's whatever team shows up. Is this Trent's Arsenal? Are they coming? Are they sleeping on the pitch? Or is this Piers Morgan's Arsenal? Are they vigorously searching for that Arsenal glory that, you know, Thierry Henry brought? It's a team that has the funds to do great things in Champions League. So it's... I don't know. It really kind of cracks me up to watch this team in action because it's a team that has everything, but seriously, just for the last few years has not been able to get it together. And it's so inconsistent in that, you know, you lose Van Persie, who was, in my opinion, about 60% of Arsenal. You know, really, you know, I think their two signees have stepped in well and have... You know, to an extent, filled the shoes, but they're no Van Persie. So this is a team that I don't see making Champions League this next year. I see them finishing, sixth or seventh, honestly. Wow.
Sixth or seventh?
Yeah.
Wow. Bold call.
They trade places with Everton.
Oh.
Who finishes in front of them if they're finishing sixth or seventh?
What team
is that? Tottenham. I would say Tottenham. Tottenham would
West Ham's in sixth.
I would say Tottenham fifth, Everton fourth.
Okay.
And,
maybe Liverpool
fought it out for three.
Maybe Liverpool
two and
six,
three.
Yeah.
And
here's a question:
Chelsea on top
in Champions League. Does Arsenal make it through group stages? In your opinion?
I say, their group is Olympiacos, Schalke, and Montpellier. They beat Montpellier. They beat Olympiacos. I think they're going to be okay.
They got 6 points, right?
Right.
Yeah, I think they'll be okay to make it through, but until they play somebody.
But as I said, think about it, the teams they play. Two out of their last three Champions League games are going to be away. With those three out of six games against United at home, at Tottenham and at Everton, you can't play your best strikers every game. You can't.
Right. That's going to be hard at that point in time when they're going to need to play. You know, hard in Champions League. They just lost to Norwich. This is a team that's on its heels. You can't have any confidence in the clubhouse. If they make it out of group stage, they probably will. They've won these two games, like you said. They've got 6 points, but they're not going to win Champions League. They're not going to go very far.
Plus they may not have Chesney back for Schalke.
Right.
So you never know. And they have the Ox out too.
Mm-hmm.
So you never know what's going to happen with them. I mean, with those guys out, and the number one goalkeeper not being in the goal,
I think
you saw with ankle injury, you never know.
I think they're going to hope that, you know, the hay's in the barn, so to speak, as far as Champions League, hoping that, you know, 6 points, I mean, hoping that they can add a couple points here, finish that off and get through. But I think their main focus over these next couple weeks has got to be in the Premier League and hope that, you know, what they've done so far can carry them to get out of the group stages. As far as Champions League go, I'd like your guys' opinion on this. City, do you think City is struggling in European competition, Or is it just a, you know, is it just an example of they've gotten two really tough draws in the groups over the past 2 years? A
combination of both, so, I would say.
Two points. One, go back to what you were saying about Arsenal. They're going to have Thomas Rosicky out the hamstring, Diaby out with thigh, Chesney's been out for the whole time, and Sutton's been out with a broken leg. With possible of Chesney and Ox being out, I don't know how the Champions League's against a good Schalke team. I don't know how well they're going to be. Mm-hmm. Now, to answer your City question, I think, for matter of fact, one, they've been dealt incredibly hard
two groups. Incredible groups.
Two incredibly hard groups that I don't care if you're United fan, you hate City, if you're a Real Madrid fan, or if you're, you know, City off fan, you're going to say those are incredibly hard groups.
Yeah.
Now, I will say this. I don't know if Roberto Mancini, it's not that he's not a good manager. He's won the Premier League. He's won the Champions League. He's good. He's class.
Yeah.
I don't know if he knows the right combination of players to play at the right times. That's not saying the city's worse. Maybe it's just they don't know the right combination to play for Champions League, which ones to play for Premier League. Dzeko's clutch. Whether you want to admit it or not, he was even clutch last year. He destroyed United in the 6-1 defeat last year.
Mm-hmm.
And Roberto kind of just not necessarily wrote him off, but gave Tevez, gave Aguero, gave Balotelli more chances than Dzeko had, more appearances.
I think it's a balance between he's trying to obviously keep his team fresh. The Premier League's a grind. But at the same time, you know, I think City's at the point where it's time to start competing in the Champions League. You gotta get out of group stages. Yeah. Like, that's unacceptable.
Exactly. Why do you compete in the Premier League? To make it to Champions League. No. So, you know, when you get to the big stage, you know, as a fan of a team who doesn't get to partake in Champions League, you know, if we made it the big stage, that's where my focus would be. You know, when you finally get there, you want to win that thing. You just won the Premier League. What is the next step? To win it again and lose in group stage to Champions League? No, you want to win Champions League. So, you know, for a team like City, I think, you know, obviously Dzeko has been phenomenal. But this is a team that, you know, in comparison to a lot of teams in the Premier League, has the depth to play both of these. They have world-class strikers on their bench, you know, and as far as picking the right ones to play at the right time, I think it has a lot to do with their egos and whether they're happy or not. And that's always, you know, you're going to have a problem with that when you have that much talent on a team. So, ability-wise, they, you know, depth, I have no, you know, no sympathy for them from that aspect.
Here's, like, would you rather be, and this could be a dumb question, you guys could be like, well, it's obviously this, would you rather be City and win the Premier League or get knocked out in the group stages or be Chelsea and finish fourth and win the Champions League?
Two things. I think, one, we all know Chelsea win Champions League last year. Give them all the credit, they won. Okay, they beat Bayern at Bayern's home. I didn't think it was possible. I don't think that you will ever see that happen again.
No. Yeah.
The way they defended, like the way they defended against Barcelona,
the way they came back against Napoli. Yeah.
I don't think that will happen again. So I would say the fluke against Chelsea, actually, wouldn't fight. Chelsea finished what, sixth in Premier League.
Messi's not going to miss a penalty for a long time.
Exactly. No. Messi's not going to the crossbar. It's a little messy. So if I was City, I would. Here's the thing. The game they played against Borussia Dortmund. Personally, I don't think they should have won. Borussia Dortmund had 27 shots, the City's 12, and they had a penalty in the 9th minute to win, stoppage time to win.
Right.
Borussia Dortmund could have scored at least 3 or 4 goals that game, but they did.
We just drew that game.
Correct me if I said one. I don't think they got a point off of it. Now, they do play Ajax away, then Ajax at home. Real Madrid is looking like favorites to win the Champions League. They look good.
We played them so well in the Bernabeu, and then obviously that late collapse. I mean, that's just, you cannot have that. You're up 2-1, the latter stages of the game, like that's when, you know, teams like Chelsea last year, that's when you have to buckle down, you have to get 3 points, because that's huge.
I feel like Rodwell, sorry, Sweetie came from Everton. I feel like Rodwell, I feel like Sinclair, those are the guys you can play in the Premier League against lesser top 10 teams, tier teams, to get experience, to get to follow the system. And I feel like when it's Champions League, with the group you're in, you have to play your best squad. You have to play Yaya. You have to play Silva. I know he's not going to be out with the hamstring, as you're saying. But you get a point. I think your two strikers have to be Aguero and Dzeko. I know Tevez is a workforce. I know Balotelli can score goals. We saw it in the Euro with Italy.
Yep.
Two incredible goals against Germany. Yeah. But Aguero is the third leading goal scorer last year in the Premier League. And Dzeko, right now, is your clutch goal scorer. Period.
Absolutely. And I agree
with
you.
I think you have to play those. Don't
I agree with you. I think that, you know, in regards to City, Jack Rodwell is nowhere near ready to play Champions League every day. He's 22 years old. That entire signing in general just befuddles me. And the amount of money that we got for them, it was a blessing. Back to the Chelsea comparison last year, which the fact that they won Champions League is disgusting to me because in no way, shape, or form did they deserve to. They played terrible the last three games they played. Which just goes to show, like Brad said, you've got to buckle down and you find ways to win games, you know, in Champions League.
Which, by the way,
would I have rather, you know, back to the original question, would I have rather been a City fan or a Chelsea fan last year? City fan 100 times over. They earned that crown. Chelsea did not earn Champions League. Chelsea got lucky. Absolutely got lucky. It was.
As Zach Faust throws controllers at the wall right
yes,
now.
Yes, the crown is tainted, pissed on, rubbish.
Which
it's
I think...
Not, it's just not as cool to finish sixth and call yourself the champions of Europe.
Yeah, absolutely not.
I think we're seeing that luck wear off as in Tuesday's performance, Chelsea losing in the Ukraine to Shakhtar Donetsk 2-1. They got a late goal from Oscar in the 88th. This game was not on TV in the U.S., but judging by social media and Twitter, it didn't look like Chelsea came to play. Drew, I think you'd agree with me on that.
I definitely agree. I think Chelsea coming off a 4-0 win. 4-0 win in Champions League, I mean.
Right.
In Champions League, I mean. You think they'd be able to run the group. Drew with Juventus at home, which is fine. But, man... Now, granted, it was away at Shakhtar. I think Shakhtar's stat was they've won the past 22 games straight, right. Not drawn,
in all
not
competitions.
Lost.
Yeah.
In all competitions, they've won 22 straight. That's something to take into effect, especially at home coming against Chelsea. You know those supporters are going to go out there. You know the ticket prices are going to be raised for the tickets. But Champions League game, a big night. But they're not making it easy on themselves. Now, they are in second place with 4 points, but Juventus has three. Now, they do have to go play at Juventus, okay, second to last game, and then they have two home games against Shakhtar, and then one against FC
Norwich, which drew with Juventus, which helped Chelsea.
Yeah.
Which exactly drew with Juventus. But they did not to look on par on key today. I mean, Shakhtar had 23 shots, 11 of them being on goal. Chelsea only had 15 with 9 on goal.
Chelsea's defense is shaky.
I'm telling you, with John Terry not the back, how good are they?
You know, as big of a scumbag as he really is crucial to that defense.
And granted, him being to back tonight, how much has the, Smitty, you would say, the court appearances, the racial slurs, the him being accused, the Ashley Cole, the, you know, Twitter FA, how much has that affected his play, his... captaincy as his leading the team. What would you think? How has that affected?
He's dealt with being a scumbag in the past. He's a shell of a human being. He's an awful person. He's a football player. He's good at it. There's no denying that. Whether or not you are big enough of a douche to go buy a Terry jersey, root for John Terry. Terry sucks balls, but he's good at football. You cannot deny that. And he is an absolute force to be reckoned with in the back. You know, Juventus was my pick at the beginning of the year to win Champions League.
Right.
So, you know, obviously I'm going to pick Juventus to beat Chelsea the next game they play. But I don't think any of this is going to have an effect on Terry because I don't think he's a human being. I think he's a soulless, heartless bastard. And I think he's going to come to play.
All right. Great analysis there. Let's, we got two more games to look at real quick.
Pick Juventus to win Champions League?
Yeah, you said it on the podcast a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
Barcelona, I think we all, I mean, poor Celtic. I mean, you really thought they were going to come back there, but then, you know, once stoppage time was announced, 4 minutes, you're like, all right, here we go. Great goal from Iniesta, and of course, Jordi Alba getting the goal in stoppage time to win it for Barcelona.
Here's my 2 cents on that. If you watch the game, if you didn't watch the game, you think Barcelona scored in the 45th minute, okay, to go into halftime, and 90th minute plus 4, they scored with, what, 10 seconds left, 13 seconds left in the game. So you think that's not that best way of winning a game. But if you actually watch the game, they dominated the game. They could have scored 4 goals. They had 28 shots, 10 on goal, compared to Celtic's 6 shots and 1 on goal. The 1 on goal was the goal, period. Right. It's not like Celtic had multiple chances. They were in the game throughout. Barcelona had 82% of possession. 82%. You never see that. So it's not
it's
like
the Barcelona way.
It's not like Celtic was making chance after chance after chance, right?
No, you couldn't get that possession if you played FIFA with two human
beginner
controllers and set the controller on the side and just played by yourself
right.
And nobody.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. It wasn't. Now, granted, I think they did deserve a draw. Losing in the 94th minute is tough. With Jordi Alba tapping, it wasn't like it was a built-up play of a goal
right.
Tapping. But Barcelona, I would say, it goes to show they're shaky at the back. They are, and I think that really shows and attests to Real Madrid being
Julio
favorites to win the Champions League. Barcelona's not how they were last year, not how they were 2 years ago, especially with Pep Guardiola when they blasted United. I think it really shows that Real Madrid really are the favorites when they get. Barcelona always are. They always, Lionel Messi. They have Iniesta. They have Xavi. They have these guys. But I don't think they're the team they were under Pep. I don't think they are.
I really hope we get to see El Clasico matchup in the Champions League. I think everyone would enjoy that. Let's wrap up Champions League talk with one more game. United. A little scare there at the beginning. To FC Braga. Braga taking the 2-0 lead in the first half. But Chicharito starting the onslaught, 3 unanswered. Chicharito showing little signs of his performance 2 years ago during the Premier League season. Could this be Chicharito's, obviously, with Rooney and Van Persie up front, Chicharito in Welbeck. Chicharito's not going to get a lot of time up there. He did get the start today. Do you think, if Chicharito keep this form, maybe Sir Alex will have the chance to sell him, or you think they'll might keep him?
Here's the thing. Here's Sir Alex's headache, is what he has. Over the international break, Rooney comes back with 3 goals. Danny Welbeck comes back with a brace. Robin Van Persie comes back with a goal. And Chicharito comes back with a brace. Okay, that's your 4 strikers right there. And then this past game against Stoke City, Rooney had 2, Danny Welbeck had 1. Okay, Van Persie had 1. So you're thinking 4-3-3, attack is looking good. You start Chicharito, he scores you 2 goals plus, including the winner, right? So I think the rumor was Sir Alex was going to sell him for around $12 million. He's not worth $12 million. Chicharito's great. Now the headache of the Sir Alex has, I think Chicharito made it a. Played a great game today. I don't know who Sir Alex is going to pick for the Chelsea game. Sir Alex always, Chicharito always plays Chelsea great. He did last year. So I think you would give Chicharito the nod over Danny Welbeck. Now, if they played, when they brought Nani on today for the Champions League, they went from a 4-3-3 to a 4-2-2. Put Rooney kind of on the left wing. Van Persie played the number 10 position and had Chicharito be the spearhead attack. Man up front. And it worked. Nani came on, had crossed into the box, cleverly just crossed Chicharito to make him go up 3-2 was fantastic.
Right.
It was David Beckham-esque, if you want to give it. Granted, cleverly's got a long way to go. TC23 was, DB7, right? Long way to go. But think about the headache Alex has. With Chicharito, with Danny Welbeck, and Van Persie and Rooney, who do you start? You tell me. Who
what
would
an
you
awful
start?
Headache it must be to have.
Chicharito, honestly, you got to sell the guy. If I'm Sir Alex, I'm selling the guy. You've already got...
like you're selling the guy?
Yeah,
really?
I'm selling him. You know, if he's scoring goals like this, you don't have... you have an opportunity here to make money if he's still producing offensively for a team. Don't let him rot away on the bench. I think he's a great player. He's a bit of a goal poacher, but I think he's a great player. And he finds a way. There's something to be said for someone who can be in the right place at the right time. I think there's something to that, honestly. And I think there's something, you know, a lesser Premier League team or someone in another league could do with this guy, and he could be the number one for that team. And I think he could make a lot of money off of that, too.
I will put you this. He is a goal poacher. Okay, I agree with that. Now, two of his three offsides called today was he was on. The ref missed it completely, and he had an open goal that he should have scored. Yeah. Now, granted, but don't you think, as the season goes on, as, say, United, I think it looks pretty clear, being 9 points from three games, they're going to make it past the group stages.
Yes.
When they make it deep into the Champions League, make a run, hopefully, okay, they'll be up there contending with the Premier League title. Say they get past Chelsea for Capital One Cup, and the FA Cup coming up, don't you think it would be nice to have that burden, quote-unquote, of who to start for... okay, I'll have Chicharito and Rooney for Champions League.
Right.
I'll have Danny Welbeck, Van Persie for Capital One. I'll have Rooney, Van Persie for Premier League.
Let me say this.
You have those options.
Right now, rank your strikers. 1 to 4. Rank all four of them.
I think you have to say Van Persie's number one, just because of the goals he scored and Rooney's timeout. With
right.
the cut, now Rooney scoring two goals,
agreed.
I don't think he's going to be any lack of goals. I think you would have to – I think it depends on the game. Danny Welbeck maybe being 3, Chicharito 4.
Yeah.
After the performance he put tonight, Chicharito can score goals.
Right. Okay.
But you have Kagawa as a – he's listed as a forward. Now, granted, he does play the David Silva-esque role, not nearly as good as David Silva. But
my point is –
what do you do?
If you are Chicharito, do you want to be known as the fourth string striker? No. You want to be the number one somewhere because you know that you can score goals. You want to be the number one in an elite league, and you can be if you get sold. You know, you does he pull a Tevez? No, hopefully not. But I could see that sort of thing happening if this trend continues because you have so much talent to work with up front.
Which Manchester club has the best strike force?
I would go United right now.
I would go United with Van Persie.
Are we talking from
goals? I would have said City
strictly?
Last year. I would say United.
Are we talking from goals strictly? But I mean,
talking skill. What's your opinion?
Here's the thing. Balotelli's been hurt.
Yeah.
Correct? For some of the games. Not always. He's been hurt for some of the games. Rooney's been hurt. Okay? Your top City's striker is by far Aguero. Right? Van Persie is for United. Van Persie's is tied for the Premier League with Demba Ba.
I would go Dzeko.
You would go Dzeko as your top striker right now for City?
Just from the way he's been able to deliver.
I'm not talking recently. Obviously, Dzeko's in great form. I'm talking overall, who has the best strike force?
I think you have to go with last year, 2012-2011 Premier League season. City won the title on goal difference. That's great. Top two Premier League scorers, Van Persie, Wayne Rooney. Put them on the same team. Done the question.
It's a no-brainer for me. Man U this year. Last year would have been City. This year it's United.
No, midfield... totally something different.
Yeah.
Don't you agree?
Yeah.
Right.
Totally something different. But I think forwards-wise, it shows again today. We go down 2-0. You know Braga knew it was. We knew it was coming. And the fans knew it was coming.
Right.
That we were going to come back. The goals were coming.
Right.
That's the way it is.
All right, let's go to some predictions for this weekend. Let's start at the Emirates. QPR making the trip, the London Derby. Zach, you see... QPR making another surprise against a top club, against Arsenal?
You know, I don't know. I hope so. I hate Arsenal. And I like to see a team recently promoted do well in the Premier League. But it's at the Emirates, and I think that Arsenal wins this game, I do, because it's just... I see QPR rising to the occasion later on this season. I see them surviving,
right?
But I see them clinging to life by a thread. I don't think that they're going to finish in the middle of the table. I think they will finish, you know, 16th, 15th. I see them obviously this has been a very tough schedule for them. I think Arsenal will win this game, but I hope with all my heart that QPR can pull something off there, but I don't think they will.
To the Etihad, Manchester City welcoming Swansea. Scott Sinclair getting to play against his old squad, maybe. I mean, I don't see any way City loses this game unless Michu has another great performance like he had at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I think, like talked about before, I think Arsenal beats QPR. I think City gets a win here.
Okay. Drew, you agree?
I think Michu would have to do something incredible, right, you know, to get any type of results here. I think City, as much as I hate to admit it, coming off that, you know, 10 men down, scoring 2 goals, stoppage time, late game win with Dzeko. Their drone's going to be pumping. I do think. Now, granted, David Silva comes into play. Don't know how much, but home against Swansea, they get the result, 3 points.
Let's go to Super Sunday. Let's start with Liverpool derby. Everton hosting Liverpool at Goodison, 9:30 Eastern. Let's start with Brad. How do you see this game turning out?
This is a tough one for me. Obviously, Everton's been playing well, and Liverpool has not necessarily been playing well, to put it in those terms. I think it'll be a draw. That's my prediction. I think Liverpool will get a point. I think Everton started out hot. I think they're cooling off a little bit, had a few injuries and stuff like that. I think Liverpool go and get a point.
Drew?
You'll never walk alone, right? No. I think this is the time that Everton, it's at home. I think they, with Mourinho being out, I think it's time for Everton to start turning tables on the dominance
power
of the
Merseyside side.
It's not going to be complete by any means, but this game could start the shift of blue overcoming the red.
Yeah, I think it's obvious that this is a pivotal moment. There's a power shift, despite the fact that the funds may be on Liverpool's side. We have a brilliant manager, we have a brilliant organization, and we have brilliant players who want to play for the people's club. And this is a team that fights through adversity. This is a team who will rise to the occasion. We'll win this game 4-1 at Goodison.
Oh,
wow.
4-1? I was going to say 2-1, maybe. Or 2-0.
If Fellaini and Gibson are healthy, this will be a 4-1 affair.
Here's my opinion. Last season.
4-1?
Last season.
Last season.
No, I'm not even saying. Just last season, Liverpool in general. Tough year. Kenny Dalglish. It was hard as a Liverpool fan to watch that.
They won the
however,
at Goodison because of the Rodwell red card.
However, Liverpool beat Everton 3 times last year. Twice in the Premier League.
And if you watched
once
those games,
in the FA Cup semifinal, as Suarez dominated Distan. 2-1 Liverpool victory.
Come on. 2-1?
Honestly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Listen, it's going to be a draw, so.
Okay.
Well, we've got it all on record.
I don't see.
It's going to be a 4-4 draw.
It's a massacre. It's an absolute massacre.
Here's the thing. I don't know if it'll be a massacre. I don't see Liverpool getting 0 points out of this. I don't see Everton getting 0 points out of this. I think Liverpool can play for the draw. I do think they can. I had to go with my gut. I would say 2-0 Everton, 2-1 Liverpool, Everton. But I do think it's possible for them to do get a result. I don't think it's going to be a 4-0 blasting. I don't think of that. We'll do that.
Okay. Last game. At Stamford Bridge, Chelsea, Man United. You know, every time these two teams play, it's always a great game. I'm not a real huge fan of either squad, but I'm going to be definitely watching this game. They're always fun to watch. Whew. And I'm going to say a 1-1 draw. Sorry, the other team gets the win.
I think United will get a win. I think.
Away?
Yeah, I do. As much as I hate to say it, I think that, like we talked about earlier, I think their strike force is hot. I think Rooney and Van Persie are going to give that defense all kinds of trouble. I think Chelsea will score. I don't think United's defense is remarkable by any stretch of the imagination either, but I think United goes in and gets 3 points.
True.
I agree with Brad on the fact of our defense is remarkable, but I will say this. Today for the Champions League game, Evra and Ferdinand were both rested, okay? So they will be back. So the back four will be Evans, Ferdinand, Evra, Raphael, okay? John Terry will be suspended for these games.
Right.
Now, the first game we play against Chelsea, 2 and 3 days, like I said earlier, is a Premier League game. That's number one overall. Capital One Cup is not. So with that said, with John Terry not being the back, as me and Sabina talked about earlier, I don't know how strong their defense will be with Cahill and David Luiz at the back. They could be great. I don't think they can cope with Van Persie, with Rooney, with Danny Welbeck / Chicharito. I don't care who you want to put in there. They're going to score goals. I would take, going into this game, I would take a 1-1 draw, a 0-0 draw. I would take a point from going to Chelsea, the Premier League leading champions, and getting a point there. I would take that.
Right.
But I do think with our mentality, what we've been having, coming back from, you know, being down these past two games, I think we could pull out a 2-1 win at Chelsea. I think it's possible.
Zach. I'm going to go with the exact same score. I'm going to go with 2-1. I don't think Chelsea's as strong a side as the table would show. I do think that they will win the Premier League. But I think that they will win the Premier League through their ability to beat every single lesser team. I don't think that they match up well with better teams, but I think they will have more points at the end of the year. To whereas I see Man U, you know, obviously they had a slip up with Everton. They can lose that type of game. Man City, same story. I think that Chelsea has a tendency to beat who they're supposed to be, even though they may not be, per se, the best team in the Premier League. But I think they will end up with the most amount of points. So I'm going to go with 2-1, Man U.
Okay.
No, we'll say a surprise game. Smitty, Brad, we'll touch on this. Also, Southampton versus Tottenham. Brad, as you know, Southampton only lost to one goal from City.
Right.
Only lost by one goal to United.
Yeah. Right.
Got blasted by Arsenal, I understand that.
Right.
But they've been playing their hearts out.
Right.
They play Tottenham at home.
Right.
This is a thing. It could
be,
they could win.
Here's the thing. Their backs are getting up against the wall. They need to get some points from some teams. You know. It's coming up. So I think this could be a possible upset. Tottenham playing away. Great, I know they beat us 3-2. I fully understand that. Away at Old Trafford.
This is the Premier League. These are teams that, you know, every given Saturday or Sunday, you have to come to play. And, you know, with a team like this, backs against the wall, what do you have to play for? Survival. There is no greater motivation than to survive. So, like you said, Drew, I'm going to put them on upset alert too. I think this is a game that at least could be a draw.
I see this game being very similar to our intramural team versus the Asian Storm.
Yes. A shoulder header in the 90th.
Yeah, the hand of God goal to make it. What do we lose? 5-1. 6-1. I think they're very outmatched, but I think that's a great upset alert pick. I think that I could see them getting a point. I do not see them getting 3 points. I think 3 points is a stretch.
For those of you who don't understand that analogy, the Asian Storm are a bunch of foreigners who came over here and absolutely destroyed us. I guess we never played soccer growing up, and it was 6-1. And then by the grace of God, I put it in a corner, and Brad headed it in with his shoulder.
Well, it's more of my palm, similar to Maradona's.
And we scored, and we celebrated, and the foreigners laughed at us. But it was definitely it was a gift.
I did the Danny Welbeck celebration, which he did steal from me.
I think Tottenham. I don't think they're an upset alert for two reasons. They're going to want to come back after this loss to Chelsea. And I think Brad Friedel's going to get to play. And he's going to want to make himself known as, you know, still the number one keeper in the squad.
Yeah.
There's only so much I can say about Brad Friedel. I think that Slow Loris is a much better keeper. I've never had much respect for Brad Friedel because he quit international at such a young age. He's got a British accent now, and he was born in America. So I'm not a big fan of Brad.
I'm sure we'll be
been critical of the U.S. men's national team.
We'll be seeing him.
And you know, I could care less what happens to him, and I hope he gets his job stripped.
I'm sure we'll be seeing him for years to come on Fox Soccer once he retires.
You know,
exactly.
Goals on Sunday, he'll be on there.
Right, him and Warren Barton.
Which I would give the gig to Casey Keller in an instant. Hopefully when Tim Howard retires, he gets that gig because he's a well-spoken American and a, you know, better keeper tenfold. Friedel should just go back to the Jurassic period and try to start a fire and maybe create the will.
I would say, so like you said, Southampton does have their back against the walls, but their schedule is kind of favorable. Out of the next six games they play, West Bromwich they play, Swans they play, QPR, and they play Norwich. Those are winnable games. Those are games they can get points out of.
Right.
So like you said, I think it's going to be tough. Brad, it will be tough. It will be Asian Storm versus us. I'm not playing soccer, but it's possible to get points. I do think it's possible.
What was our team name? Nottingham
Forest.
Nottingham Forest. Yeah, wow. Awesome.
This
year we are Jurgen Winsman.
Clever. Okay. Wow, that was your Premier League roundup. We went quite a ways there. I didn't really think we'd go that long.
Yeah, we did.
Is it time to talk Walking Dead?
It is, but at the same time, I have one last little soccer bit here. We didn't mention the U.S. men's national team.
Oh, of course.
Who advanced their group stages.
Right. Nervous times at first, but
we won 3-1. Right. I was happy with our performance. Obviously, there was no Landon Donovan injury. It's comical almost to how long the Klinsmann system has been working. We've seen Landon and Clint once. I believe. So, I think the future of this team lies with Michael Bradley. Honestly,
he's a stud.
He's awesome, and I think that his time at Roma will pay off huge for Americans. You know, to talk about the omission of Josie Altidore,
who we praised the last podcast.
Yeah, we did. I did.
I think we jinxed him.
This is the only thing I didn't like about Klinsmann's decision. I think that Altidore is a rising star, and this is a time to be, if anything, implementing your system around our future. You know, we've got Donovan, we got Dempsey, but they will be around for 2014, and that's it. Right. You know, they're not going to be our strikers in 2018.
That's my question to you. Will Dempsey, not Dempsey, correction, Donovan, will he play in 2014 World Cup? With the 50-50 retiring, with him not being...
He'll play in the next World Cup.
Do you think he really will?
Yeah, I think he'll play in the next World Cup. What his role will be...
Will he start?
Yeah, he'll start. He'll start and he'll play. This is a guy with the motor. You know, this will be his last hurrah. This is a guy who will publicly say...
It'll make for a great story.
Yeah, no, it will be. This is a guy who publicly says, I know I'm getting old, guys. I know that my role right now is not to be, you know, scoring hat tricks for my team. It's to sit back and to be the veteran, to be the leader, to think about things. And I love that for him because he's a humble human being, and he has done so much for this sport in this country. You know, would we be sitting here had the U.S. not made that push in the World Cup? You know, would so many Americans not be soccer fans had he done what he has done for the sport? I would say absolutely not. You know, he is an ambassador to the game in this country, and he should forever be recognized for that. And this is a guy that will take a back seat to superstars just to do that. And this is why he's my favorite player. But I would say, yeah, I would say he would be there in 2014. It's his last go around. I don't know why he's not our captain. He's not, but in my heart he is. He's the face of American soccer. He always has been.
USA wins the World Cup, and he rides off into the sunset.
Wow, that would be quite
I agree. He needs to be there. I want him there. I love his energy. I love what he brings to the game.
Whatever his role may be, he needs to be there for American
soccer.
He's
a playmaker. I don't think he will be the biggest playmaker to carry our team. I think that we put on Dempsey, on Bradley's shoulders, like you were saying. I think we will need him at some point, whether in the later stages of qualifying or in the World Cup, that we need Donovan. He will produce for us. He will come up with some big goal, something to give us a spark, something to give us a highlight film for. I think we do need his... What he will give us the next few years, what we're going to need at some point.
Yeah, it's just, you know, if I was in the same pitch as Landon Donovan, I'd automatically have this glow about me to know that I was on the same pitch as a legend. You know, growing up here, we don't have that many types of players, you know, that you would have in a soccer culture. So if I was a soccer player here, just being on the same pitch as this guy would be an absolute honor. So this is something for our youngsters more than anything. That's why he needs to be on the pitch. We need leadership, and we need a symbol, and that's what he provides. You got to look 2014 right now. I'm calling the Breck Shea, Graham Zusi. These are the guys that are going to have to step up.
Terrence Boyd.
Yeah, Boyd too. Yeah, and Jones. These are the guys who are going to have to step up and assume these roles and learn from what a group of guys that has
Agudelo.
Done. Yeah. Well, you know, he's got so much potential. He really does. Even Freddie Adu, who was supposed to be our savior.
Timmy Chandler?
Yeah.
Maybe he'll get back on the team?
Yeah. Well, no. I would never offer him another cap.
Really?
Never. No, absolutely not.
He's only 22.
He is, but he wants to play for Germany. He can play for Germany. He never will. He can get out of town because, honestly, I wouldn't offer him another
Eddie
cap.
Johnson has been a great story. He's going to be 30 when the World Cup happens. You wonder, you know, I mean, the stories out of last year where he tried out for the Mexican team, Puebla, and, you know, they said he was out of shape.
Yeah.
But obviously he's back in shape. Maybe his term here with Seattle will prosper.
You can't help but mention Tim Howard as well. This will be his last World Cup, too, mm-hmm. more than likely.
Right.
You'll see guys like Klischen will still be there. Danny Williams will still be there. Yeah. Beckerman, probably not.
Probably not.
Beckerman. Jeff Cameron will still be there. Goodson will be 32.
You got to look at people like
Adu will be 28. Trundolo will be 35. I don't.
Yeah, Trundolo's he's got a motor band.
We need him for qualifying.
You have to love Trundolo.
Yeah, you do. And you've got to love
Mayor Vanover,
who play soccer like Americans. It's just when you look at our roster, there are faces who we have never seen who are going to have to play in that World Cup. The next one after that. Don't even know about. So this is a sport that is growing in this country, and hopefully people are going to step up. Hopefully we have, it's discouraging that this last Olympic round that we had, you were hoping the under-23s would at least qualify for the Olympics, but they didn't. And then that's scary. It is. It's scary because we couldn't even be... our group stage team, so
definitely a step back.
Yeah, it was a step back. It was, but I'm a huge fan of the Klinsmann system. I think he's done a tremendous job, and I'm behind him 100%, and I think that we'll find a way to win because that is what America is about, isn't that is how what we've done throughout history. That's how we advanced this last World Cup. It was surreal. It really was.
I don't think any of us are worried about the hexagonal stage. I mean, worst case scenario, finish fourth, have to play the Oceania winner.
Yeah.
Which, that's worst case scenario.
That's Mexico will give us a threat. Mexico's good, don't get me wrong.
Right.
Besides that, come on.
Right.
Panama.
Jamaica.
Besides, besides Mexico, there is no worry in that stage. And this is going to get nothing but easier for Americans playing qualifying games in this country because people more and more are flocking to these games.
attendance is rising by leaps and bounds.
Right.
Play games at Kansas City. Play games at Columbus. Those fans.
They might need places bigger than Kansas City now, though.
Exactly.
Play
at Arrowhead.
Play up in Portland.
Exactly. You come to Middle America. Middle America. This is, you know, there are no Mexicans there, okay? This is a stadium that is selling out, okay? These are American soccer fans. Has nothing to do with ethnicity. It's not on the border. It's awesome. It's awesome to see. So, you know, obviously, take that the right way, but you've got to love the way this sport is growing in this country.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. All right, now we can talk Walking Dead. We missed the season opener, the premiere.
Carl,
can we please recap that? I thought the first, the first 5 minutes of that opening monologue with no dialogue whatsoever was just awesome, and I think it showed you, you know, just how far these people have come to where they're going to every house they can. Trying to find food, you know, T-Dog makes a little notion, hey, we got walkers coming, all right, let's get in the cars and go.
They're hardcore now.
Right, they're an army, yeah. Pretty much. And they finally found the prison, as you fans of the comic books will read. Mm-hmm. I love the fact that they're having to kill walkers with, you know, all this body armor on them. It just adds a whole nother dimension. One thing I didn't really get was Rick's necessity to not settle in the lawn. He wanted to go. After all these people are so tired, just took out everyone in the lawn. He wants to keep going. What do you make of that? I obviously see it as the showrunners want to keep the show going and not, you can't just have a whole episode just sitting on the lawn.
You know, when you're watching the show, you can't get up to take a piss. You can't get up to put a hot pot in the microwave. You're sitting there, pissing your pants, starving to death because you don't want to leave the screen.
Right.
Okay? The first episode was bad enough. The second one was... You could not blink because there was so much happening. The first episode, you know, like you said, why would they not, you know, were these walkers going to, you know, what were they going to do? They weren't going anywhere. Right. Could they not have rested one more night?
And with their 98% accuracy, they wouldn't have had any trouble.
Exactly.
Had one strangled in the lawn.
Could they not have sat there and talked about it? No, we've got to take this part tomorrow. Why? Why, Rick? Why does everyone comply? And it's just like, I find myself being just, you know, obviously I'm frustrated with it, but at the same time, I don't care. It's like these producers are brilliant, absolutely brilliant, because I'm there's just chaos. Chaos. Everything's chaos at all times. And there's no time to take a break, there's nothing that can't happen. Because, right. You know, last season, I never would have thought, and I'm not reading the comic book, so I don't know. I'm just watching these. You never would have thought Shane would have died.
No,
not at all. So this is just like, at any point in time, anybody can die. Because I would have thought he would have been, you know, this Rick Shane thing would have been going on till the end. That's what I would have thought based on the first season, right. Second season. So, you know, you can't leave the screen.
You got to really credit the writers because last season, Frank,
they're awesome.
After last season, Frank Darabont, he left mid season, so that kind of threw everything off. But now the writers are finally getting into their own. What did you guys think of Michonne, the new character that we saw at the end of season two with the two armless zombies with the katana blade? Drew, what do you think of her?
She's bad man pajama. I mean, she's going to cut your head off, plain and simple. It'll be interesting to see when episodes start coming later about, you know...
it looks like next week we'll see more...
The community come, the governor.
Right, it looks like next week will be a more Michonne episode.
Brother, Merle. Will be a kind of a surprise appearance for us. But, I mean, Spanish is talking about, how can you, in my opinion, how can you not love the character Rick is becoming?
Right.
Dude's got shafted in every way possible, okay? His wife, literally probably the worst mother slash wife ever in the creation of the world, right? Agreed. She's having a baby. That's tough. I agree. She wants to kill and bring to the world.
Most likely Shane's baby.
Most likely Shane's baby. Not the, I mean...
Or mine.
Rick is having to leave these people who are half the people, half the time they don't agree with him, half the time they do, don't know what's going on. The characters are becoming of don't take no crap from nobody, I will kill anybody to protect the group I'm with. How could you not like the characters you're becoming? It's what a leader is. It's what I think of what you think of someone who's bad to the bone in a zombie apocalypse going to be like. And I think I like the way Glenn's not becoming so much of a pansy as he was the first two seasons.
Yep, right.
He's kind of got a backbone. Maybe it's because he likes Maggie now and he feels he needs to protect her, needs to provide for her. But
I also think Dale kind of contributed to that in season two.
Yeah, but I'm saying Daryl and Rick, they're a hard combo to stop. With the crossbow and with machete to a guy's face, as we saw.
Right.
It's unstoppable.
Can you imagine Shane? Shane probably would have killed that guy right after you know, they see him at the end of the first episode.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, you know, we go from first season, we don't kill the living, to Rick
just
splitting this guy's skull with a machete.
To be fair, the dude threw a zombie on him
you just see how, you know, back to the producers, back to the writers, how brilliantly they have progressed into what would happen if this really happened. How hardened these characters are at this point in time. Yeah, you know, at this point in time, you probably wouldn't have a problem doing that if it was because Rick, his sole concern is the survival of the people he's caring. He's you see him losing every episode just a little bit of his humanity.
Right.
You know? He's here to protect and less so to be interacting as a normal person.
Worst thing I ever did was, first of all, I got on the bandwagon late. Worst thing I ever did was I watched season 1 and 2 on DVD, so I was immediately satisfied with popping in the next episode and seeing what happened, and now this is torture, waiting a week. This is ridiculous.
What? Only problem I have a problem with is we've talked about it many times in those conversations. Carl.
Carl.
I'm actually starting to like Carl.
He's I'm not saying him. He's popping guys left and right with his pistol with silencer.
Going on his own.
His mom doesn't know where he's at half
Carl?
The time. She's always yelling, Carl. We made fun of her multiple times. Well, I agree he needs to step up as, you know, being a man with the group. He needs to lead. He needs to protect. But
how much does that have to piss off Carol? After spending the whole season of Sophia, Sophia gone, she sees Carl go off.
Watch your child. Carl, at this point, his long hair don't care as well.
That's pretty odd.
But here's the thing.
Helps when there's no barber.
How old is Carl? How old is Herschel's daughter?
Because they're flirting.
What is going on?
They've got to be close in it.
Okay?
She's 20 and he's 11.
Is she 20, though?
I don't know.
She looks about 20.
I mean, she tried to kill herself last season, didn't she?
She did try to kill herself.
Here's a question. Is Herschel becoming a walker?
Before we go to that, the conversation with Herschel and Lori in the first episode, how epic was that when, you know, she made Herschel promise that if she or the baby are become walkers, put them down. Now that Herschel has, you know, lost his leg,
you know, it's like they've reversed. Exactly.
Right.
Like, she's caring for him as the pregnant woman.
Is he a walker?
I'm not convinced. He might not be right now.
Maggie looks like she said her goodbyes to him, basically.
Right, she was ready to follow.
I mean, obviously,
But at the same time, like, there's no fever. In the past, you know, I don't know how accurate they're going by whatever this disease is supposed to do to the human body. But, you know, if I had to guess by what I have gathered from the way this disease is supposed to spread and how fast it is, this is a guy that got his leg chopped off. He's weak. He's old. Would that virus not have already taken him by now whenever...
Shane got stabbed and 30 seconds later, healthy Shane is turned into a walker? No, I don't think he will. And if he does, I don't think that's very
accurate. Also makes me wonder what's wrong with Andrea. We only saw her once in episode one. We didn't see her at all to episode two, but she was coughing. She looked very sick.
Yeah, you know, and it's weird. It's funny to think about, you know, if she just has, like, the common cold.
Oh, right.
Or, well, I mean, she's kind of being a puss if she just has a cold, but maybe she has, like, pneumonia or strep or something. But, you know, I don't think she's turning into a walker. Or there's certain side effects that they have seen to have. But Herschel, back to Herschel.
Right.
What a brilliant...
It was a great scene.
Yes, yes.
Boring. You know, when giving out the mouth.
CPR. This for me personally, this has been the most intense episode that I've seen all three seasons by far.
Right. I think we all jumped out of our seats whenever Herschel finally regained consciousness. Was he biting her face off? Just a great scene overall.
Two things I'm done with Walking Dead. One, doesn't give much credit, who I really respect. T-Dog. Dude's always got Rick's back. He's popping heads left and right with crowbars, with doesn't matter what he's doing. He's loyal.
Right. Well, he was ready to bail, though, in season two. Remember the car? He had Lori and Beth in the car with him. He was like, hey, we're going to the coast. And then Lori's like, hey, we're getting out. But that might have just been panic after that whole leaving the farm and everybody jumping off. But
I want to see what this... You know, Michonne with her brothers walking behind her, black girl with a huge sword, katana. I want to see what she's
like. It looks like that's what the majority of next season, which, who do you think, we saw the scene where Carol was practicing the C-section on the walker, and we saw someone in the bushes looking at her. Do we think that was the governor, or maybe Merle, or maybe, it probably wasn't Michonne.
I think it's someone from the city that knows they're there.
Right.
Now I don't know how that's gonna play out at all, but I do think it's someone from the city. I would like to see how Michonne plays out with her. Kind of, she's the comic. She has a big role. Obviously, there's two brothers behind her, so they can't eat her. No arms, right. Grab her. But
yeah, I don't even know anything about this governor guy that you keep, you know, hearing stuff about. You see him in the previews, but I already don't like him.
Right,
and hopefully he dies.
Just from what I've heard Andrew Lincoln's interviews from Comic-Con, people asking about it, and they say he's just pure evil, so...
Yeah, you know, whatever saved community, I don't know, all I've seen is the previews, and I'm not going to go look online for spoilers, but...
Leave that to Devin Cook.
Leave that to Devin, the ultimate Spurs Grand Marshal spoiler douche. You would think that there's going to be some kind of confrontation between the jail colony and this perfect community, whatever they're doing. I don't know. It's obviously not perfect. If there's Andrea and the what's the black girl? What's her name?
Michonne.
Yeah, they're, you know, locked in a room. Whatever that, you know, we're about to find out
with what that's all about. Deer. Were they in a deer closet?
Yeah, I don't know. But you know, and again, like, how are they going to go from this point? You know, are they going to have one episode them, one episode the jail colony, until they meet up? Like, how's that going
to
work out?
That'll be, well, here's a question.
That'd be very interesting.
With Merle obviously getting left in Atlanta.
Merle, yeah.
Merle getting left in Atlanta. What is Rick going to? What if they meet again? What happens then?
You know, he's probably going to want to kill T-Dog and kill Rick.
Okay, yeah.
But I don't think Daryl will let that happen, based on their relationship.
But they're brothers.
They are brothers.
Remember when he was hallucinating?
Right.
Those ties run deep.
Right.
And if he sets off, I mean...
That'll be a great episode.
Yeah, you never know what's going to happen.
I wonder about the other two prisoners that... are still alive from the original five that we saw.
Yes. I hope we eventually run into the black guy and his kid that Rick...
Oh, from the pilot.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
My favorite episode, going back, you're talking about the pilot, favorite episode still today is when they got in the CDC. I thought that really pushed the show forward.
Right.
Explained a lot. And I just thought it was...
That was a great scene when Rick, you know, just pounding on the doors, and Shane and them, like, they're not, nothing's going to happen. And then, you know, the drunk guy down there in the CDC finally opens the doors. Going back to, oh, I guess we can wrap this up. I thought it was a great, great way to use those prisoners, as these people have been locked in the prison for 10 months and they didn't know what was going on. They thought the zombie apocalypse was just something that had happened in their prison. Yeah, they were like, hey, can you give us a cell phone? And I think that was just a great scene where it was the first time you saw someone since Rick in the first episode that I realized that, you know, this is zombie apocalypse, and that was kind of cool to see.
It's gonna be interesting between see the way Rick and Lori, what they do. Their relationship looks like it's crumbling apart. It's falling. She's an awful wife and mother, we get that. But she's obviously put your husband first, saying, do you know what's best for the group, what's best for everyone else? Kill the people if you need to.
She wanted to have a serious conversation in that last scene, and
Rick's done, but if you're a Rick, how could you not be done?
Yeah.
Your wife cheated on you with your best friend.
I mean, he didn't make eye contact with her last scene.
She probably has the baby of your best friend.
Right.
Why would you, I mean, he's in kill mode, he's in survival mode, he's in I got to leave this group mode, and so I think it'd be cool to see, or it'd be interesting to see how the relationship works. If they reconcile back together, if they...
And they joked about getting divorced and getting lawyers.
If they have the baby, what happens then? Who knows?
Predictions, let's wrap this up. Does anyone have any predictions? One character that will not see the next couple episodes? Any predictions?
I'm going to go with T-Dog. He's going to get shot in the head or something.
Oh, wow.
T-Dog's
going
to get bit.
I'm going to go with one of the new inmates.
Okay.
Safe call.
Easily disposable.
I hope it's not Lori's baby that turns into a zombie and eats its way out of her vagina. That would be terrible.
Brad?
I don't think they'll kill off any of the characters. They're running thin on characters as it is. It's got to be one of the inmates.
I'm going to go with a safe bet and say Herschel, just because I don't think, unless they get a peg leg with a wheel at the end, I don't know. I don't know how he's going to, you know, run whenever they need to run. And so, with that, wow, that was a really long episode of Stoppage Time. I hope people are still listening by now. Drew, quickly throw out your Twitter feed so people can follow you.
At DrewPeterson116. Follow me.
Brad.
At BradTaylor82.
Zach, we know you've got two very popular accounts.
At zsmith001, and more importantly, at vernlunquist_. That's drunk Uncle Vern.
We're getting close to 1,000 followers. It's a very exciting time. And remember, you can follow the show at Stoppage Time Podcast or like us on Facebook. We've got a fan page there. You can catch all the episodes. So, until next time, for Drew Peterson, Brad Taylor, and Zach Smith, I'm Hayden Herrera. Thanks for watching.